Welcome everyone to What the Fantasy. My name is Brandon Hay at HayB3.
My name is Zade Cantavedian at ZCantsFF.
Yeah, so we've been off a couple weeks. We guested on Shall We Football, and that was a ton of fun. And then last week, I had a crazy week, so we took a week off, but we are back tonight. We made it through another NFL week, so... Z, what have you been up to?
Man, just working a lot, watching a bunch of football. What else, man? Kind of surfing a little bit, getting back to life. I had last Wednesday off. I went and saw I saw Lord Huron at the Santa Barbara Bowl on Tuesday night, last Tuesday night with my lady. So had some beers, beautiful evening. Took a little break from football, which was kind of nice because the grind really creeps up on you and you forget how demanding it is week in and week out. And you got to really develop like this kind of like stamina for it. You know, I remember last year when we were doing this, when I was doing this by myself, I remember like the first 2 weeks I was going into it. And by the third week, I was already burned out. And that same pattern is already showing up with me for 2 weeks. After the first 2 weeks, I was going into it. And by week three, I'm like, Oh my God. I was like, I don't know if I could keep doing this, but.
Well, he figures out the microphone. Yeah, I took last week off, and me and my wife actually went out to Bahama Breeze, had a couple of cocktails, an appetizer out. I just had to get out of the house. Been working remote for, over a year and a half, and, it's just taking a toll, and I just needed some time to recharge, and I've kind of done that this past week, so I'm ready to go with some more football, so I'm glad to be back with you. While he figures out that, let's go ahead to what we're going to first start talking about tonight is we're going to look at the rookie quarterbacks so far through the season because this was such a big class. Everyone thought that all the first round was filled with talent. So we're going to just through four games kind of take and re-rank the quarterbacks. So kind of pulled up the quarterbacks right here. So so we've kind of got the stats right here. Z, are you back? No. Okay. Well, we will I will continue on. So as you can see, I got a little crazy with Excel tonight. So we have some tables, some visual representations for the people watching the stream. So it's as we know, Trey Lance played sparingly, so he doesn't have that many stats. And same with Justin Fields. He just started a couple of games. So kind of looking at Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, and Trevor Lawrence, and we kind of see their stats right here. They've been up and down. So I thought Trevor really struggled the first 3 weeks, but he really played a lot better against Cincinnati this past week. And then Zach Wilson kind of struggled too, but last game he really came in strong. I think there's still some signs where he's not processing as fast as we would like, but let's see if Z is back now. All right, I can hear you now.
Yes, sorry about that.
All right, that's fine. I was just talking about how first, we're going to re-rank the rookie quarterbacks. I just kind of have up here their stats so far. I was just kind of going through that where Trey Lance obviously is an incomplete because he looks like he's going to get, if Jimmy G misses some time, get to start. Justin Fields played much better in his second start. And I thought Trevor played much better in that Thursday night game against the Bengals. Matt Jones performed pretty well against Brady. And then Zach Wilson showed some signs in that win against the Titans. So what are your thoughts about the quarterbacks? And then we can start kind of re-ranking them if, from what we've seen so far.
I think Trevor Lawrence really kind of – you saw those traits from Trevor Lawrence last Thursday that you saw it at Clemson. You saw him make those off-balance precision throws. He threw a nice sideline grab to – I can't remember who – I think it was – some random guy, I don't know who it was, but he looked like he was coming into his own regardless of the turmoil that's happening in Jacksonville. Zach Wilson, they're really playing hard for Rob Saleh out there, and they're playing with a lot of heart on that team. Zach Wilson, I believe. I think he's playing with like one of the highest pressure rates this year, and he's got like, you know, he's getting sacked like crazy. So his offensive line isn't really doing him any favors, but he's, you know, he's trying to make the most of it. Luckily, he's a mobile quarterback, and he's going to go through some growing pains, but this is the NFL now, so not really any excuses anymore after this. Justin Fields, I think we'll see slowly start to come along. I think right now we can put Mac Jones at one, Trevor Lawrence at two. We can put Zach Wilson three. Oh man, Justin Fields and Trey Lance. I guess we could put Justin Fields at four and Trey Lance at five, just because we haven't seen Lance play it yet. I honestly am kind of iffy on Lance this week. I picked him up in all my fantasy in whatever league I can get him in, but the more I think about the matchup with the Cardinals, the more I think they're going to absolutely just eat him up, eat him alive. So we'll see what happens with Trey Lance. Really, really excited to see what happens in that game.
No, I think I pretty much agree. I would never have imagined Matt Jones would be one. I think we got a little spoiled last year with Justin Herbert and just stepping in there and playing so well. We just expected, you know, all these quarterbacks look so good in college. They're such high prospects. We thought they would, you know, step in and play a lot better. I will admit that Justin Fields, his first start against the Browns, we talked about that on Shall We Football, and I thought he would play much better. I think that partly was the Browns defense played very well. I think it was a horrible game plan by Nagy and the Bears, but he looked much better in his second game. But obviously he's behind the first three who played better. Zach Wilson and Trevor have had problems with interceptions, but they both looked a lot better this last game. And Trey Lance has the running capabilities, and I'm very interested to see how that offense looks with him, just because Jimmy G, you know, he's more experienced, but that offense is just so limited with him.
Yeah, and we're gonna get to see a whole new part of the playbook opened up for Trey Lance too that we haven't been able to see with Jimmy G, because Kyle Shanahan just knows that Jimmy G has his limitations, and we just can't open that part of the book up. Those deep shots. Only problem I have with Trey Lance, I went back and watched his throws. He telegraphs his throws a lot. We had a lot of safeties. He had safeties diving in on his throws a couple times. He throws in double coverage, kind of some kind of reckless throws. So hopefully, like, he looks at the film and kind of like limits that a little bit. But I mean, honestly, Trey Lance is not far from taking the first spot from all these guys. I think he probably has the best situation out of all these quarterbacks. Best coach and best offensive system. So, I mean, after the end of this week, he could easily be number one.
No, I definitely agree. Even though Matt Jones, you know, kind of showed some very good signs when they were playing the Buccaneers. True. I mean, he still hasn't been, you know, lighting it up. He's had some very bad games. None of them have really shown much. And with, you know, I think Lance or Fields, if Fields can continue to progress, since he's the starter going forward, which thank God that now he finally came to his senses and then put Dalton back in there. Once Fields got that first win, there was no reason to go back to Dalton. And I agree with Lance. I'm actually surprised with all their injuries with running backs. I thought they might play Lance more to kind of get that running game going and, you know, produce some offense, just because they can't depend on all the running backs since they just keep on getting hurt. But yeah, I think it's a fluid situation with these quarterbacks, but at least we're starting to see signs, because the first couple of weeks, it was looking like, you know, I know it was only a couple of games, but all of them were looking pretty rough early on.
And isn't it ironic that we live in this bipolar world of fantasy football where we have a Trey Lance as number five, but he's probably like the best fantasy. He's the number one fantasy option of these quarterbacks.
Yeah, definitely. Just because of, you know, that offense and the running capabilities he has. Yeah, it's crazy about that, because, you know, Matt Jones definitely doesn't have running capabilities. They're letting Trevor run a little bit more, but he's never going to run as much as Trey Lance. Fields has some of that, but he more likes to scramble in the pocket, kind of like a Russell Wilson, and Zach Wilson doesn't necessarily run as much. So, yeah, Trey Lance has the biggest upside, you know, with the running. As we've seen with Jalen Hurts could have a very mediocre passing day, but all that rushing ability with him just raises up his fantasy value. Mm-hmm. So now we'll move into, I kind of wanted to look at some running back splits. So before you came on, I don't know if you heard me. I said I got a little crazy with some Excel tables. So
nice,
I did some tables. So I just want to go through some of the snap shares because I was thinking about this because I watched the Eagles game pretty much the whole game last week. And Kenneth Gainwell had a good game and a loss against the Chiefs.
High five, man. Virtual high five. Virtual high five real quick. Sorry, go ahead.
And, you know, we both love Kenneth Gainwell. But, you know, especially the game before against the Cowboys, I don't know what Sirianni is doing with Miles Sanders. So I just wanted to go through some teams and, you know, kind of look at the snap share and look at touches. So you've kind of gone through of your game script with Gainwell when they're losing. You know, he usually goes up. But as you can see here, you know, Sanders has the larger snap share, which makes sense. But with that larger snap share, I would have expected the touches to be way a wider gap in touches. And why do you think they are not giving Miles Sanders the ball more early in games when they aren't, you know, behind?
Maybe they're just kind of resigning to the fact, well, like last week, for example, maybe they're just kind of resigning to the fact that let's not, I don't, honestly, I'm thinking maybe they're just thinking, look, we're playing the Chiefs. Let's not kind of waste downs against Patrick Mahomes trying to run the ball. It's just, I honestly, I can't tell you. I don't, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know. I don't have a reasonable explanation. I'm not going to try to waste my breath trying to think about that.
Yeah. The thing is, we obviously love Gainwell. But it's not like Miles Sanders is just this big running back that can only run up the middle. A lot of the stuff that Gainwell does, they do with Miles Sanders. They ran read options with him last year with Hurts, and they throw him the ball. So I understand sometimes they want Gainwell, you know, in the 2-minute drill. And it seems like if he's on the field when they get to the red zone, you know, they'll keep him in, or Sanders has a long run. But to me, Sanders is one of their better players as of now, before we really know what Devonta Smith is and everything. So it just confuses me. Their game planning seemed better this past week than the Cowboys game. The Cowboys game made no sense to me, how they just refused to run the ball until, you know, pretty much the game was over. But that's one that's very confusing to me because I thought Gainwell, I wanted to go back on this, at least when I checked last weekend before the Monday night game. Right now, you know, Kenny, I said he'd be a top 24 running back at PPR. He's right at there, 24. So at least early on, he's looking that way. But I couldn't even imagine that Sanders – I thought I was pretty high on Sanders too in this offense. So that's a very surprising one to me. The next one makes absolutely no sense at all to me with the Miami Dolphins. I could have seen Miles Gaskin sharing some with Ahmed, but he is sharing time with slow, unexciting Malcolm Brown. So the Gaskins has the larger snap share, but as you see in touches, it's crazy that Brown is getting as many touches as he is. I believe last game he way out-touched Gaskins. And I don't know, because this happened with the Rams, with McVay, I don't know what people see in Malcolm Brown other than, you know, his pass protection, but that doesn't make sense to me why he would, you know, see that increase in touches. So what do you think the Dolphins are doing? Because they don't look overly good, even, you know, without Tua early on.
Again, this is one of those mysteries that coaches just kind of, it seems like they've completely abandoned the run game because they're both, no one's really out touching each other on a per game basis. They're both getting like 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 touches each. So there, it doesn't really seem like there's a philosophical, there isn't like a commitment to the run game. They're just like, let's try to get it out with short passes. Probably. I don't know what their passes are like out there. I've really watched, maybe I've watched 5 minutes total of Dolphins football this year. So I can't act like any kind of professional or on the subject of Dolphins football, but judging by the touches in that backfield, they don't even want to run the ball. They just want to start you know, they want to pass it. So it's not a concern for them. It's the, and what the sad part is, you don't even have like Savon Ahmed being utilized as a pass catching running back. So there's no running backs being utilized to a significant degree in Miami. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I agree. It's crazy because I thought the way the Dolphins would do is, you know, have a strong defense, run the ball, you know, pass it with Tua. Well, now Brissett, but it's I'm at a loss for them. So that's kind of confusing. Now with the Lions, it's a little more, I guess, complicated. I know DeAndre Swift has had some injuries early on, and I'm just hoping that's why they are not giving him the ball more. He does have 65% of the snaps, and Jamal Williams has that number doesn't add up, so I must have typed that in wrong. But Jamal Williams has around 30% of the snaps. But as you see, the touches are very, very close, with Williams with 55 and Swift with 64. I think game 1 and 3, Swift was – they got him the ball very well. And then that game 2 against the Packers on Monday night, it seemed like they didn't give Swift the ball until the end of the game. So I'm still holding out hope for this because Campbell keeps on saying that Swift's going to be more involved. And I understand Williams, you know, that he's a strong runner, but still I would like Swift to get, you know, more of those touches. I'm hoping when he gets healthier. I don't think this one is – necessarily as egregious as the other two, but what are your thoughts on the Lions backfield?
I mean, we saw DeAndre Swift. First of all, DeAndre Swift is the clear pass catching running back out of that backfield. There's not really any other way about it. We did in week one see Swift get 11 targets, and we saw Jamal Williams get 9 targets. Now, I think that was a complete outlier. Let's not lean on that too heavily going forward into the season. Don't do yourself a disservice by leaning on that stat. What we're looking at here is Jamal Williams being the primary between the tackles running back, and we're looking at DeAndre Swift as the pass catching running back. Last week, DeAndre Swift had 73% of the snaps in a deficit, right? So he's seeing the majority of the snaps in a deficit, but he's seeing at least 8 rush attempts. That's his floor per game, and he's going to see about anywhere between he'll probably see like about 5 targets or 6 targets a game. Now, what he does with those targets is a different story. We know him to be a very efficient, talented pass catching running back. So I think maybe he just had a bad day at the office. Bears are a rough defense. He just probably had a bad day at the office. I'd continue to trust Swift as a RB2, a reliable RB2 with upside for RB1 weeks. I wouldn't really look into his down production last week. Jamal Williams, on the other hand, he's as reliable as they come, man. He's, you know, 12 for 42 week 3, 14 for 66 week 4. You know, maybe you'll fall into the end zone every once in a while. He's got 2 rushing touchdowns on the year. So, I mean, those guys, I think the script is already laid out for them for the rest of the year as far as what their utilization is going to look like. And this is Jamal Williams getting 14, 12 rush attempts in games they've been losing across the board for 4 weeks straight. So that's Jamal Williams in a nutshell. Now imagine for whatever reason, Jamal Williams finds himself in a positive game script. Then, you know, Jamal Williams is going to be pretty solid. He'll be like a poor man's Nick Chubb, you know, something like that. Yeah, so keep going with Swift as an RB2. I mean, he's reliable. He's as efficient as they come. And let's just hope Dan Campbell starts using him more creatively, puts him on some wheel routes. So, you know, I'm fine with Swift still.
Yeah, I'll agree on that one. I think both are usable, especially Jamal Williams. I use him in a lot of flex spots in some leagues, you know, because he gives you that solid floor if he just gets a couple catches. And then, like you said, he could possibly fall in the end zone. The next is the Cardinals. I know, you know, probably can't complain too much since they're undefeated. But Chase Edmonds is just so much more explosive, more efficient than James Conner. I will admit, James Conner hasn't looked as bad as I thought, but it truly does seem James Conner is taking that role that Kenyon Drake took last year, where when they get close to the end zone, he's going to be in to fall in for those 1 or 2 yard touchdowns, which is maddening when you have both Chase Edmonds and Kyler Murray that I think are both better runners, but you know they just want that bigger back to just, you know, kind of go in there. So, you know, I think those snaps are, you know, it's going to stay with Edmonds probably in the lead because of his pass catching. But I've been very pleasantly surprised on how efficient Edmonds has been, you know, not only running ball and, you know, catching passes. But it just seems like, you know, Connor is going to be a play. You know, if you think the Cardinals are going to score a lot of points, which they have, you know, and get to the goal line, he's likely to get one of those fall-in touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah, I believe so too. And Connor isn't being really super efficient with his touches, but they're just going to use him regardless of when they're in the lead. So expect that going forward. Chase Edmonds is still solid, man. Like, I mean, Chase Edmonds is seeing 63% right there, 63% of the snaps. That's great. That's super good. That's RB1 snap percentage, man. So,
yeah,
you know, don't worry about Chase Edmonds. James Conner is a good play if you want to stick him in where they're, you know, predicted to be in the lead, or obviously, like, if they're playing a horrible team, they're just going to get up on really quickly. You know, Conner's a great RB, low-end RB2 flex. Hopefully, you're hoping that he falls in the end zone. That's what you're hoping for with Conner. Do not rely on solely his rushing yardage.
I agree. With the, now we'll go into the, we can be quick with the Washington football team. You know, I know, seeing your Twitter, you've been very frustrated with the usage of Antonio Gibson, and McKissick. It's kind of, I guess it's somewhat similar to what the Lions kind of do. Cause he's still, you know, getting a lot of touches. It just seems like, the timing of him getting taken out of the game for McKissick has caused, you know, some of, you know, his floor to go down. But I think Antonio Gibson is still very solid running back too, but I just don't know consistently if he'll reach that running back one kind of volume that everyone was hoping before the season.
No, I don't believe he will. I don't think he's going to see, you know, five targets a game. We saw them try it week one. He had 20 touches in week one. He had like 20 rush attempts and five targets. And then they just bailed on that really quickly. I think we will see, though. Right now, McKissick has actually more goal line rushes or rushes inside the five than Gibson does, which is what really tilts me. Because if we're not going to get those targets for Gibson, we want the rushing touchdowns. Now, ultimately, I do think that that will regress back to Gibson as the season goes along. Gibson right now is taking his fair share of damage, though, physically. He's got shin thing. He's got, you know, so that's kind of freaking me out a little bit. But if they just manage him during the practice, during the week, I think Gibson can come out, you know, as a solid RB1 by the end of the year with, you know, some big plays, hopefully, some big breakaway runs, which he's capable of, and, you know, getting those touchdowns. And, you know, receptions here and there.
Yeah, he had that, I think it was last week, where he had that crazy long touchdown catch where he ran past everyone and the jumped Bills into the – yeah. Was it, or it was 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So he has that capability, and some of with the injury situations, I guess we should have somewhat saw that coming, because at Memphis he wasn't, you know, he wasn't the running back, so he didn't get all that beating. So maybe it's going to take him, you know, a couple years to kind of, you know, get his body used to that constant pounding with, you know, being the feature back, at least running the ball. So the last one is the Browns. And I know you put a tweet out today about this, about the Hunt and Chubb. And I think they're both good running backs. But for those people that I've seen earlier in the season, people said that they should trade Nick Chubb and just have Kareem Hunt. And then Demetric Felton could be the Kareem Hunt role. And I saw last year when Nick Chubb was out, the offense did not, you know, was not the same with just Kareem Hunt. He's a very good running back, but he is not the runner that Nick Chubb is. And I think Hunt he takes his opportunities. And I think some that raises his fantasy value is I think it was 2 weeks ago. I don't know, all the weeks are running together to me now, but he had like a 27-yard touchdown run, yeah, you know, to try to ice the game away. And that usually be Chubb's work, and Chubb has more, you know, a good amount more touches, and Nick Chubb is just so much more efficient with the ball. So I think people just see, you know, with PPR, some of these plays with Hunt, but I'm still sticking with Chubb as a back-end running back one all season.
Yeah, and you know, as far as Chubb's touches, snaps, and all that, like, everything is right on course, right on schedule. This year, you have Chubb's snaps at 51%, and you have Hunt snaps at 44%. Last year, Chubb had a median of 51% snaps on the season, and Hunt had 46% of snaps on the season. Chubb had 18 attempts per game, one target per game. Hunt had 10 attempts per game and three targets per game. So, yeah, I mean, Chubb's not going to be the, you know, the primary pass catching running back, but he outproduced Kareem Hunt as a running back playing four less games on the season. He outproduced Kareem Hunt. The touchdowns are coming from Nick Chubb. Kareem Hunt's still great, but I heard today on a very big podcast network, one of the biggest podcast network, this guy said Kareem Hunt is going to finish higher than Nick Chubb. I turned it off. This is garbage. I can't listen to this. It's just ridiculous, man. The only reason Kareem Hunt is higher than Nick Chubb is because of the touchdown that Kareem Hunt vultured from Nick Chubb last week. Like, just stop it. Like, he's not going to finish higher than him unless for some reason Kareem Hunt starts getting like 10 targets a game or like 7 targets or 8 targets a game. Stop it. Moving it. Let's just move on because it's so frustrating.
No, I agree. That was the last one. I just threw that one in later because I saw your tweet. So yeah. Actually, we'll move on now to our, you know, fun segment. And this week, we're going to talk about our top three desserts. So are you a big dessert guy?
I love dessert. I can do dessert as an appetizer as well and then do dessert again after the meal is done.
Definitely. So since we've shortened our pod time, we're only doing three here. So let's start with number three. So I'll start. Number three for me is I love a great brownie sundae. You know, I need that. Usually if I have ice cream, I need a brownie with it. You know, put a brownie, some ice cream on top, maybe some cookie dough little bites, some caramel on top. I love a great brownie sundae. So what's three for you?
You can't argue with that. Yeah, and mine's just the cheesecake. Just standard, nice cold slice of cheesecake. You can't go wrong with that. The graham cracker crust on the bottom, nice cold, firm cheesecake on top. Maybe a little bit of strawberry drizzle syrup or what have you, you know. Cheesecake, standard.
That's funny because number two for me is cheesecake. And I like all kinds, you know, of cheesecake. One of the grocery stores we have around, I don't think you have Publix's out west, correct?
I haven't even heard of that, no.
So yeah, I think it's a Southern thing, but they have all these different, I have to stop myself from buying it because they have this, you know, an assortment cheesecake where they have like four different kinds of cheesecake, but 12 slices.
Like, and my wife. Like a cheesecake sampler?
Yes.
Like a cheesecake flight?
And my wife doesn't like cheesecake, so it's kind of like if I buy it, I know I'm eating the full cheesecake within a week. So I'm like, oh, that it's so good. But yeah, I love good cheesecake.
Yeah, my number two are these custard balls I had in Japan. I had them. We went to Japan 2 years ago, and we had these like really delicious. Japan makes really good desserts and really good coffee, but I had these desserts, these custard balls outside of like this old Japanese castle, and then the rest of the time I was looking for them and I only found them one time after that, but those things are to die for. Custard balls in Japan.
Well, they sound good. So my last one actually could be an appetizer, like you said. I love a good bread pudding. You know, I just think it's so good. You know, sometimes you can have it with sides at like barbecue places. So I absolutely love a great bread pudding. My mom makes a very good bread pudding with, you know, I think there's some like bourbon in it and everything. Mm. And it's delicious. So that's my number one. It was hard to limit to only three because I love so many different types of desserts. Another close one would probably have been key lime pie. But those are my top three. So what is your number one?
My number one is lemon meringue, just because I love lemon flavored anything. Lemon flavored anything is my top flavored dessert, and then chocolate after that. So lemon meringue.
I do like the lemon bars you can get at certain places. Absolutely. I love to get those, and those are great little snacks and everything.
Yes, sir.
So now we'll go into kind of segments that we've started a couple weeks ago: the fantasy frustration and the fantasy miracle. My fantasy frustration was I was losing in Scott Fishbowl. I only had Derek Carr left. So Derek Carr like gets that his last touchdown and I'm winning. So I forget that in the Scott Fish Bowl incompletions are negative points. So I think like I haven't won. You know, I'm not even thinking anything about it. And I just checked something else after Derek Carr throws those three or four incompletions at the end of the game. And I see that I lost by like 0.4. So that was pretty heartbreaking. I was like, oh, if they just hadn't gotten the ball back, I would have won that game. So what's your frustration?
Yeah, I'm in this league with this fantasy website called the Fantasy Whisperers, a great group of guys, but I'm just getting killed with injuries. My quarterbacks, I waited a little bit too long, got too cute, but my quarterbacks are just getting dinged up. I traded Miles Sanders for Tua Tagovailoa. I maybe got a quarter out of Tua before he got dinged up. T. Higgins was injured. Jerry Judy's gone. Jimmy G got injured, but I got Trey Lance, so I'm excited about that. So I'm 1-3 in that league, and hopefully I'll be making a turnaround. My team's starting to get healthier, and I can make a strong push with Trey Lance giving me a W this week.
All right, and then on the other side, the fantasy miracle. Make this quick. I thought I was done, even though Bryan Edwards has not been, you know, great, and for some reason Derek Carr refuses to look at him until it's late in the fourth quarter. But still, I was only up 3. This is PPR, only up 3, and he had Bryan Edwards, so I thought I would lose. I mean, you would think if you have a starting wide receiver, he should be able to get that in a game. And he got that one catch in the, I think, fourth quarter. That was 5 yards. And I was like, oh, they're going to get this much time. And then there's that late throw him that was out of bounds. I was like, oh, I escaped. So that was my fantasy miracle.
I cannot watch football when I am in a sweat, like a 3-point sweat. Are you kidding? I was in a 10. I was like in a 9-point sweat on Monday Night Football. And I had Waller and my cousin had Keenan Allen. I turned the game off like at the end of the second quarter because the Raiders were playing so bad. They were going 3 and out, punt, punt, punt. And Keenan Allen was getting these little dump offs. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to watch this. I'm going to have a heart attack. Anyways, my fantasy team miracle last week was Cordarrelle Patterson, CPAT. Gave me 35.20 points in the yards per fantasy league. I was the highest scoring person in that league for week 4. And I'm on Sleeper. And Sleeper gives you like a little crown when it puts a little crown on your head in your profile picture. Yeah. So that was cool. I put up like 210 or 215 points for that week. I went nuts. So yeah, definitely that was my miracle CPAT.
Okay, and we'll close up today's pod with, we can do a short discussion on players we're worried about the rest of the season for a redraft. Kind of, you know, we thought they would finish a lot higher. So I'll start with you.
To open. You see this? You see this guy? This is why I forgot to close the door. What are you doing, dude? Is this going to happen? Okay. So my guy I'm worried about is Baker Mayfield. I thought Baker Mayfield was going to have a much better year, but right now he's having – all right, this is not going to work. He's going to have a touch – right now he has a touchdown percentage of 1.8%, which is 30th in the league. He has a QB rating of 89.7, which is 23rd, and a sack percentage of 9.6%, which is 5th in the league. He's getting sacked the 5th highest rate in the league. I thought he closed the year out last year. I thought he was strong. I don't know. I don't believe he's being – playing worse necessarily, but I just don't think he's, you know, it's just not looking good so far for him for the rest of the year.
Yeah, he's definitely missing some throws. I don't know if you saw to kind of ice that game against the Vikings. He missed Odell Beckham wide open. Yeah. And I saw he posted something on Instagram kind of going back at the critics, you know, how Baker likes to do. But, I mean, he hasn't played great. I mean, they're still winning, but obviously, where they want to be, he's going to have to play better. So that's a good call. And I'm going to kind of go with a pair of receivers. One is Allen Robinson. He is – I don't know what's going on. He has always been quarterback-proof. And right now, if he doesn't get it going, I mean, he might not even be a wide receiver, you know, too, because they're just not – he's just not getting the ball.
Yeah, I think if that's going to need a little bit of time, I think you got to leave those cupcakes in the oven for a little bit longer just to get to the right temperature. I think he just needs a little bit more time with Justin Fields.
No, I agree with that. I saw someone posting on Twitter today saying, you know, certain players to, you know, just give up on your Tates. And I think Allen Robinson can still bounce back early on that. One player that has been all right when he's played but just worries me is A.J. Brown. It seems like he's always hurt. He's always hurt. And even when he wasn't hurt that first game, he wasn't, you know, getting the targets and everything. And I mean, Julio's already hurt too. So it's just something, it's more for him just, I guess, going forward. You're always going to have that injury kind of thought with him just because he misses games. He plays through injuries most of the time. But I mean, if he's always injured, you're never getting it, his highest potential. And I had him as, you know, like a top three receiver coming into the season. And he has that ability and talent. It's just, you know, with especially with a hamstring, I don't know how that would go. He had two bad knees last year through the whole season. So many times I see him make an amazing catch and he limps off the field and he's just like off for a drive and he comes back in, you know, somewhat like, you know, his hero Julio that, you know, always goes through injuries. But, you know, Julio, I think, you know, stay on the field more. And obviously this is early for A.J. Brown, but those are the two guys that I'm kind of worried about. And I have a lot of both of those players. But with Allen Robinson, I still have hope that, you know, I think it's just been kind of a weird thing. And my only worry for Allen Robinson is Nagy, because for some reason, even when Justin Field is making these amazing catches, it's like he doesn't want to like let him be this amazing quarterback he can be, which I kind of understand he's a rookie, but still, if they want to compete, they need to, you know, let him go, especially with David Montgomery hurt. So it'll be interesting how these weeks without David Montgomery, how now he kind of runs that offense.
You know, and to close that out, to close it out, what do you think we see from Justin Fields this week against the Raiders at Las Vegas? Do you think we see them open it up more? We saw Matt Nagy declare Justin Fields the starter for the rest of the season. A vote of confidence, maybe. I don't trust Matt Nagy, but Justin Fields is going to do what he does. Justin Fields is a great quarterback. And, you know, once he starts to get loose, once he starts to feel it, week one was an atrocity against the Browns. Very difficult defense to play against. Kirk Cousins got his ass kicked by the Cleveland Browns, for God's sakes. You know, we saw him open it up against the Lions. They relied on David Montgomery. Part of the game plan. You don't have to throw it against the Lions. They're god-awful defense. You know, so you don't have to throw it. There's no point. Ball control. Clock control. Now we got the Raiders. Pretty good through the air. If they push it, if the Raiders open it up, I think we see Justin Fields open it up a little bit and we start to open up the Pandora's box of Justin Fields. I think we start to see that kind of development this year, this week. What do you think about that?
No, I tend to agree with that. And also the Raiders, let me just say the Raiders, even though they did just lost on Monday night, the Raiders are so much better than I or probably anyone imagined. That defense is a lot better. Their defensive line creates a lot of pressure. So I could see Justin Fields scrambling a lot more, getting some good rushing yards. And their secondary is susceptible to big plays. And, you know, this is why I got Mooney, you know, on a couple of especially dynasty teams with Justin Fields, because they have this connection and their skill sets mesh pretty well, because Fields has that kind of rainbow deep pass, you know, like Russell Wilson to go deep. So I do think if it's a more competitive game than the Lions, like you're saying, I could see them, you know, unleash Fields a little more. And I think once you do unleash him and if he's able to connect on a lot of those throws and move that offense and score. So I think last week he was a little unlucky. He got a lot of long passes and then David Montgomery had some really tough runs to get the touchdowns. So I think the touchdowns will come. But I agree with you that I think, you know, with the Raiders, the Raiders kind of had an off first half last week. And I think they'll kind of get back to scoring some more points. And I think, you know, I think that could be a very, very exciting game to watch.
I'm excited to see it, man.
Yeah. So it was great to be back with you. So that's our show for the week. So we'll see you guys next week.